würden jetzt im letzten Agendapunkt, deshalb freuen wir uns auch, dass der Veronika jetzt da zu uns gestoßen ist, nochmal über die aktuellen Stand der ISSB Practice Statement, Nature Related Disclosures nochmal Neues erfahren, da gab es ja nochmal Fortschritte. Ich glaube, Thomas, ich weiß nicht, ob du da irgendwas vorweg noch sagen wolltest, bevor wir Veronika die das Wort geben gleich.
Ganz wenige Worte. Erstmal herzlich willkommen. Welcome, Veronika. Glad you are here with us today. Sie wird uns auf Englisch vortragen. Wir können Fragen auf Deutsch stellen. We can feel free to ask German questions in German. Because Veronika understands German very well, but feels more comfortable answering in English. I'm ready here to share the slides when you want me to do that and to turn the page later. Please give me a quick sign, Veronika.
Ja, danke schön, Thomas, und schönen guten Tag an alle in der Runde. Also wie gesagt, also alle meine Begrifflichkeiten sind in Englisch. Es tut mir leid, ich versuche das beim nächsten Mal auf Deutsch zu tun. Ich verspreche.
Geht, also die Runde sollte das aushalten können.
And I see that you guys are already in the details of the new version of the SRS. So a lot of compliments for that heavy lifting, because it's really not easy. I can imagine doing that in many rounds again and again. So my aim today is to tell you where we are with regard to the work on the nature-related disclosure. I have a couple of slides, not many. I think they're 12 or 15. Some of them are probably very well known to you. So I know that you're a very knowledgeable audience, but just to give a little bit of context where we started, where we are, what to expect next. And before going into the document, just to say that we are now, I mean, we have just one more board meeting, which will happen next, the week after in Frankfurt, where we'll discuss about the permission to ballot. So we are really at the very, very final stage of that conversation. Moving very carefully, let's say, with the whole topic of nature-related disclosure. And you're not going to find this on the slides, but this is pretty obvious, because we are today at 45 jurisdictions adopting ISSB. So we joke a little bit, it's an insider joke, that we cannot update the slides quick enough, because it's changing very rapidly. It's a luxury problem, let's put it that way. But it also puts us in the position to listen very carefully what the market is able to adopt, and how to make sure that we are moving at speed to fulfill our mandate on one side, but on the other side, to not put pressure on the market to do things which people would cause more confusion and more trouble versus better disclosure. Now, Thomas, maybe you can move to the first slide. Yeah. This is our priorities. They are unchanged since 2024. By the way, also an inside information, we plan our next round of agenda consultations sometimes early 2027, and we'll be together with our accessible board, IASB, what our next chapter will be. But we are currently in this one, so the priorities, number one, clearly the market wants us to support the implementation of S1 and S2 to not just to be adopted, but to be adopted with quality. Clearly we do that with a lot of efforts. And immediately after that, people expected us to do the work on nature-related disclosures and human capital on one side, and enhancing SASB standards. So the rest is pretty much hygiene, connectivity, stateholder engagement, interoperability. This is the mechanisms behind the priorities which we use. So we have put a lot of weight into nature-related disclosures, because we see how we all know how TNFD, although it's a voluntary framework, has been adopted with a very, very high speed, which means to us that it's highly relevant for the market. And we also have an MOU with TNFD that by end of October, we should put this exposure draft out, which hopefully will give them sufficient arguments to close their work on anything which is technical. So no additional standard setting coming from TNFD. They'll continue working on other topics which are relevant for nature, but they will stop this work. So hence reducing, hopefully, a little bit the alphabet soup. Then next slide, please. Thomas, what we learned in this conversation, in the process of consultation with the market, what investors tell us, and you probably hear the same. They want to know more on the governance and oversight about everything which is nature related. They want to see how this is incorporated into strategy, particularly when there is nature related transition somehow within the business models. Risk management, including use of scenario analysis, for example, for risk identification. And I'll mention that later. We know that nature is not where climate is, so nature-related scenario analysis don't exist in the same way as they exist in climate, which makes the work even more fun. Metrics and targets, people want to see what kind of quantitative information topics, like, for example, water or land use changes, deforestation, biodiversity loss and pollution are there, but they look through that from the specific needs of what is relevant for this particular business, not kind of boilerplate. And they also want to do this with a standardized terminology. That's one territory within nature is pretty chaotic. A lot of terminology, not very well standardized. Location specificity is coming again and again and again because nature is specific to a location. Context covering the climate nature nexus, industry specific, all the stuff which you know very well from our work before. It just confirms itself. And then if we move to the next page, why? I mean, one could say, okay, you have S1. S1 tells you disclose everything which is sustainability, risk, and opportunity. Why do you need to do that? Why nature comes on top? Truth is that if you look into S1, it really tells you that. But we don't have that much of guidance how to think about nature. And that's necessary to do, especially through the lens of what the investor needs to know about nature-related risks and opportunities, give entities, give companies the language which they could use in order to do that in a relevant way for investor decisions. Our important part of our decision was that we're not focusing on specific element of nature, because there was this discussion, should we not look only into biodiversity? Should we not look only into water, which cuts across many sectors? But again and again from the market feedback, we decided that it's not a solid foundation, so we have to make this territory open, that nature-related standard setting should be available on broad scope of nature-related risks and opportunities and disclosures which are only incremental to the existing SSB standards, to S1 and S2. So the rationale for the standard setting was based on these four questions. Is there, do investors want to know more about that? Is there a deficiency in the market? Is there gaps? Are there any gaps? Are there many companies or many entities which will be affected by such kind of disclosure, and how acute is that? So all of that were answered with yes, so it gave us the permission to embark on the standard setting work. Now, let me spend a little bit of time on the form of standard setting, which I think is of interest for you, maybe on the next slide, and I'll go further on the content as itself. When I mentioned that we were listening to the market very carefully, what the market is able to absorb, but in the same time, what the market needs in order to get to a good place in terms of these disclosures, we were clear that the work needs to be, should not repeat what is already in S1 and S2, should be focused as a standalone document, because that's a lot of market feedback was that do the work on nature, not as an adjacent application guidance for S1, but give it a prominent position, so nature only. Then it has to be also able to adapt to especially jurisdictions and companies who are already using SSB standards S1 and S2. But in the same time, not to limit, not to stop this adoption, and hence the decision around practice statement. Now, you're a very knowledgeable audience. I don't need to explain to you what the practice statement is, but we get this question a lot these days on the market because people didn't hear this before. And our sister board, ISB, has used it already for management commentary, for making materiality judgment. So it's a mechanism, it's a type of standard setting which exists, has its place. One clarification, it goes through the exactly same process as any standard, has exactly the process in terms of due process requirements, details, voting, exactly like is a standard. The key difference is the statement of compliance. And the statement of compliance is that you don't need, if you want to comply with S1 and S2 in jurisdictions, which already decided to mandate, you don't need to apply the practice statement in order to be in compliance with S1 and S2. It makes a difference for those jurisdictions who have already mandated. And there is one important element which I want to mention. In our work on nature, we go out from the assumptions that companies who decide to move in this direction are already applying S1 and S2, because it makes sense that you're building on existing practice or existing terminology. Now, Thomas, can you show me the next slide, please? So advancing nature-related disclosure by giving SSB nature-related requirement visibility and prominence was one of the key aspects behind that decisions, and minimizing disruption in the substantial implementation effort which is underway on S1 and S2. In the same time, it doesn't stop us from from changing the practice statement into a full-fledged standard sometime in the future when we see that the market requirements are changing or the market readiness to adopt is on a different level. But in the same time, in our exposure draft, which we plan to publish in October, we're putting this question out there. Not only do you have comments on the content, but do you have comments on the shape of the standard setting? So you, as our valued partners, once this exposure draft is out, will be in a position to comment on that. So are you okay with IFRS practice statement as a shape of formal standard setting, or you think there is something better out there which we should be using?
Veronica, can I ask a question? We have seen in this SAF discussion, like the Standard Set Advisory Forum, also some standard setters in the end are coming back with the idea, couldn't this have been like another IFRS standard? I think it was also said in the end, the practice statement could also be subject then to local, would say, adoption as a requirement, if you say so, if somebody wanted to do so, but not making this now at the moment part of the, would say, S1, S2, suite of standards and then perhaps revisiting this perhaps at a later stage then. That's what I took.
Well, just give me a second because my husband is in the room and really wants to ask me something, and I'm very sorry, but that's that's the reality.
Ja, man sah in diesen Diskussionen, das war so ein bisschen, da gab es einzelne Jurisdiktionen, die dann, Brasilien oder Türkei, die dann einfach gesagt haben, wieso denn nicht gleich erst drei und gibt sicherlich die Befindlichkeiten in anderen Ländern, wo man jetzt diese Standards durchsetzen will. Wo man sagt, wenn wir jetzt noch was oben drauf packen, dann könnte es unter Umständen zu immer so Schwierigkeiten führen.
Back to you, Veronica. I'm back. I'm very sorry for that, but that's the reality of married life. The question which you're asking, that I think is a very important question, because you're right, jurisdictions can decide to mandate. At the moment, we have jurisdictions which have mandated S2 as a first step. S1, many of them give the transition relief to give it a little bit more time. And a jurisdiction can say, okay, for full compliance, we want you also to use the practice statement. And this would have implications for companies who disclose, because then their auditors will have to go with the same rigor, same level of detail in order to be able to issue the statement of compliance. Let's say at the moment there is some appetite for that, but if I count the number of jurisdictions who raise their hands to say, yes, we would like to, I count on one hand. And they're also very careful in terms of their timeline, because they said, okay, we need to give time to the market. We are happy that people have this language to use, but pushing them into the direction statement of compliance through that is probably a little bit too much. And I think this is why we do this, to be very honest with you, okay. Because we need to balance this reality. And to the other aspect of your question on the full-fledged standard, you know, you have all the elements of it. You have the language, you have the due process, you have just the light touch of the compliance. If I would be a company, I would be rather satisfied with that. If I would be an auditor, I would be also rather satisfied with that, because for audit companies, it's a new territory and they are already having some, let's say, differences in practice if you talk about climate. So let them become fluent in nature, because before we ask them to do the audit. So I think it's a kind of balanced approach, which for now the market is kind of happy. We didn't hear a single voice who said, we are not happy that you didn't give it the same weight. Even with the most advanced jurisdictions who are very, very pushy, and I mean, some of them from Southeast Asia who are saying we really want intense language, we give you now the language. We give you all the concepts which you need to use, and you as a jurisdiction can decide if you want to go for full compliance and when. So I think that's something which kind of helps. Maybe we can go. Did this answer your question, Georg?
Yes, very much. Thank you very much, Veronica.
And here, I think this, I went through that, but I know that many of you might decide to go back to the slides later on. So, I put this slide up because, for if you need to explain this to someone in your organization, or if you need to go back to that, I went into a little bit more detail. What is the practice statement? When was it used? What is it not? And how a company chooses or is required to apply practice statement, because I think these are the typical questions which people have when they are confronted with a new type of standard setting. So it's a little bit short, but I think it answers
And we have this in the financial reporting space with the management commentary, the practice statement. So also not completely un. It's rather to be like reappeared here in that context also. Yeah. So
it's less used than the regular standard, and hence it's understandable that people come back with this question.
Sure.
Maybe we can go a little bit then to the content side. Okay, this I'm not going to repeat that. What are the advantages? Because I think I've talked about this. Now, let's speak about a little bit about what is in or the design principles. The first design principle, which I mentioned, is the broad scope. So wide scope encompassing all nature-related risks and opportunities, rather than limiting to particular nature-related topics or industry, as I mentioned, not just water or not just heavy emittance or companies or business models which have strong or high level of reliance on nature resources. We are consistent with the approach of the TNFD. We're really, really thankful that TNFD seconded to us two of their absolutely top experts to work with us on that work. I must admit it was not easy for them, because we had to put every time the question, is it investor relevant? It's great work, but is it investor relevant? So I think in the course of that work, they kind of adopted that lens, that thinking. And another important element of the design principle is that this requires information to be disclosed about recent opportunities that could be reasonably expected to affect entities' prospect in the case of S1 and S2. So you have integrated the investor lens in every sentence, every word. We took also some learning from our work from S1 and S2, that's in the center. We decided that it will be only incremental to S1 and S2, because if you look today how our climate standard is written S2, you will notice that there are elements which we repeat from S1. So here we're not going to do this. So which will define also the size of the practice statement. It will be probably much lighter in terms of number of pages. Today, I think we are moving in the direction 50 pages or so without the basis for conclusion. It has the goal to balance this new requirement, including application date, with focus on supporting implementation of S1 and S2, which means we're doing it in a way that it should not stop or create issues with the implementation of S1 and S2. And the connection to the SASB standards is there all the time. We don't develop this work in isolation because already in SASB, there are a lot of nature-related metrics. So every time we write the word in the practice statement, we check how this is linked to SASB or not. And the connection to TNFD, I also already mentioned, considering the recommendation metrics and additional guidance, we looked into the LEAP approach. We are referencing LEAP approach, although I think in our case it will be rather LEAP approach without the P, because it's about locate, evaluate, assess, and prepare. And I guess we'll stop at prepare, because prepare is not our job. This is the job of the companies. Then maybe I can give you some specific examples on the next slide. These are the information areas where we are zooming into in terms of standard setting. Essential terms and concepts, what are we going to define and what we are going to describe? And you're explaining what the difference is, but again, your knowledgeable audience, you know, the difference between define and describe. The climate-nature connections, nature-related transition, targets, metrics, we are looking into that. Engagement with indigenous people, local communities, and affected stakeholders. That's a territory where people who come from the sustainability angle, they say, okay, isn't it double materiality? We look into that only through the lens of if you have a business which is somehow connected to natural resources which are managed by indigenous people, local communities, do you have the social license to operate? Are you in conflict in some way or another, and would that affect your prospect as a company? So I'm going already a little bit into the details, but location specificity, again, something which is an element of the work in the center setting. Scenario analysis, we're touching lightly again, because scenario analysis for nature are not there, whereas scenario analysis for climates are. And we are talking about the guidance of identifying nature-related threats and opportunities, which I think will be probably one of the most useful parts of the practice statement, because, as we know, other standards tell you what to disclose, but how to think about that, it's a whole different conversation. I genuinely think that companies will find it useful. And the sources of guidance, as usual, we would put in there. So next, talking about the essential terms and concepts, which was the answer where investor told us that they want standardized terminology. We will define and describe essential nature-related terms and concepts. For example, and you see them in the blue block on the bottom, like nature, ecosystem, ecosystem services, nature-related risks and opportunities, not limited to that. So we are not inventing the wheel. We are taking from valued and confirmed concepts which exist out there, which have the evidence of usage, and we put them in a structured way into this practice statement. Then on the next slide, I'm try to give you examples on one of the very important nature-specific consideration, which is linked, for example, to location-specific consideration and how to identify nature-related threats and opportunities and how to disclose information about them. So you'll find language and concepts into the standards about this, into the practice statement, sorry. There will be location-specific guidance, including how granular, what level of aggregation, why, the location in terms of scenario analysis, location in interactions, including engagement with the indigenous people, local communities, and affected stakeholders. And again, don't expect intense and heavy requirements here. So we're very measured. It's more about the concepts and how to think about that, not about specific and detailed disclosures here. Then there are two areas where you can expect that there will be new disclosures requirements. The one is metrics on asset and or business activities vulnerable to nature-related risks and those aligned with nature-related opportunities subject to proportionality mechanisms. It could be helpful, by the way, to think about the work of our transition implementation group, who had already answered the question, what are assets vulnerable to, at that time, climate-related risks? Because we have exactly the same language in our climate-related standards. And there was a question from the market, probably last year, how to think about what does it mean, how to read the words on the standard. So I would be surprised if there is no question around that in the future once we publish that that work. Most probably there will be explanation needed here again, but we are building on already established concept here. The other requirement where you can expect to see something new is the information about an entity response and plan to respond to nature-related risks and opportunities, regardless of whether this action form part of the transition plan. In other words, we don't expect you to have transition plan on nature. Transition plan in nature is something completely, I would say, new as a concept, because the logical question is transition to what? In terms of climate, we have a clear perspective, transition to lower version of carbon economy. Transition is so much more multifaceted that we are not talking about transition plan. We are talking about plans to response, if you have them, if you define that your business model is affected by specific risks and opportunities in terms of nature, and if you think that this is important for your prospects and your investors need to know, then we give you the language to talk about this kind of activity in terms of respond to nature-related risks and opportunities. So these are two areas where there will be something new. When I say that we draw and that we build on TNFD materials, in our last board meeting in Frankfurt in June, we have confirmed that we will use the TNFD disclosure metrics as they are. So we give you the opportunity to go and see what's valuable for you there. We're not prescribing which metrics to use, how to use them. But again, the lens will be what's investor relevant. So this is just an example how we're looking into that. And what to expect in terms of next steps. I think that's my last slide. Will be my slide. Yeah. We aim to publish the exposure draft by COP17 in October 2026. In July, in 2 weeks from now, we expect to vote on the permission to ballot. I'm currently reviewing the draft or the very early draft of the practice statement and also the very early draft of the basis of conclusion, because our staff will have just about two months time to finalize this work, so we need to be very efficient in that way. We'll determine the length of the consultation period for the exposure draft, but it will be the usual one is 120 days. We think that for the size of this document, maybe we'll stick with that. But if there is a sign from the market, for example, from you or from the staff who tell us, no, we need more, I would love to hear that from you and channel it back to my colleagues. In the exposure draft, as I mentioned, you will have the opportunity to comment on the information areas, so what to disclose, how to disclose, the form of the practice statement, is this an appropriate form or you think that should be different, and also application date. So our thought as of now is that we'll most probably allow in the practice statement to be used by the companies from the immediately, but allow doesn't mean mandate. So we'll talk about this, I believe, also once again in July. So I'm going to pause here. I think I'm online with my timing. So happy to hear your questions, reflections. How does it sound to you?
Thank you very much, Veronika. It's a very useful update. Are there now immediate questions for Veronika? Perhaps I have one question in the end. I've seen on that the House of Finance in Frankfurt also convened something, a work kind of like at the competence and transfer center, they also financed in the end an event in the end on ensuring decision useful nature related disclosure. I'm not sure if you've been part of this, Veronica. It has been, it should have been a week ago about whether it was for Richard Barker.
No, I wasn't there. Richard was there because I was at the IFRS conference in London.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We've seen each other.
Yeah, we're the same group, same circus. With regard to that, I cannot reflect on what kind of the conversation was there. You know, academics have sometimes their.
So we was a little bit interested.
Different angles.
The Frankfurt community presented to you in that context, but.
I'll talk to Richard to provide you with a summary of questions, or if there is something which you can find useful for your work. I'll take a note of this, and I'm pretty sure that he'll be happy to revert.
Looking at the content, also like this linkage then to TNFD, I was also quite impressed in the end that he got to more or less like integrate and their work to the extent possible, as you said, in the end with the investor lens. So it's more or less like that they supported you, that they defined a new way of cooperation then to simply say, okay, we find a way to better reflect their work, and then at the same time in the end also getting. And after TCFD, also certainly TNFD to also like feed into the work of the ISSP, which I thought also being in the good way forward in order to build in the end this really global understanding and global approach. This was for me.
To this one, I can comment that, first of all, we're really grateful for all the work of TNFD because they have done amazing work in terms of defining concepts, working with the market. As of last week, they were speaking about more than 700 companies who are already voluntarily applying TNFD, which means this is relevant for the market. But this is really very, very wide. If you are an investor, you want really to zoom into what's investor relevant in this nature-related work. And we know it's so nascent. It's so early in terms of connecting the dots between nature-related risks and business application or effects on your P&L, effects on your profitability, effects on your business model, that it's good to have this opportunity to build on TNFD. But in the same time, we are very careful and being respectful of their work, not to put too much in order that, it's not investor relevant, but also not to put too little so that people still can build on that concepts. I believe that we'll continue working with them in a different way because they will continue, work to work on some of the bigger questions, which we are not able to address yet. Mm-hmm. For example, systemic risk, nature-related systemic risks. We all have been exposed to nature-related systemic risk to COVID. But how do you translate these into something which is financially material? I think at the moment, this is very far-fetched. So they will continue working on such things where, this is not our territory. We'll look into good concept, valuable concept, confirmed by the market, and then we try to translate them into the financial conversation. So I think as every new partnership, you need to find the dynamic which works, and I think we're in a good place.
I visited your presentation at this IFRS at the IFRS conference. I was also encouraged and by this positive also working attitude because I think you had got her first name, Mick. Mackenzie, I think, lady
Emily,
came
Emily
from. Yeah, Emily, exactly. And then that too. And then it sounds, looked very in the end, something like that you that harmonize well together.
Yeah.
I think we have a question from Lothar Ried from ENBW.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for laying out the. I'm we're also mentioning that has been applied also by several hundred companies, and you were also making a fairly strong argument that there is a true added value for the market. I assume you mean addressees and also preparers. And I'm wondering, when we looked also at the study that was presented by DRSC, so our standard making body, and also at Deloitte, there was an analysis about the coverage of the 10 standards, looking at which of them are material, looking at the 10 ESRS standards. And if you look at nature or quote unquote biodiversity, it is ranked among the two least important material standards. So I'm wondering, how do you basically assess these results? Of course, this is just an analysis of German blue chips. And do you assume that there are certain factors where your hypothesis applies more to? Or why is there such a small coverage of nature-related aspects?
I think
in among German companies,
No, thank you for that question. I think it's a super important question, and I can give you two angles to that. When we embarked on that, first of all, when we looked into what we are going to do between 2024-26, and we went out to the market with question, where do you want us to put our weight? We had a list of topics where we believed that it could be interesting to understand the market feedback. And at that time, we called this work Biodiversity Ecosystem Ecosystem Services, BEES, which I think led to some misunderstandings on the market, so we switched to nature later on. And it was interesting to see that investors from both Global North, Global South were finding this important, but different aspects of nature. And their thinking is mainly through the resource conversation. You have the resources needed, the natural resources needed, which you're using for your business model. That's one thing. And can you see this long-term access to resources guaranteed in order to continue to be able to create the value for your shareholders? That's what's one aspect. The other thing, I was in two consecutive years in Frankfurt in one conference, which is unique, I think, because it's the asset owners session. I think, Jörg, you probably know about that. Not asset managers, asset owners, which is different because, for example, pension funds, they have naturally long exposure to assets, and they really wanted to know about biodiversity and nature with intensity, which is different if you compare that to asset managers. You're absolutely right to say that in terms of, first of all, in terms of understanding, the whole conversation around nature hasn't landed yet in terms of terminology and resource availability entirely to the table of the CFOs and to the treasury teams and to the controllers. Because we don't have very solid mechanisms how to price nature into our business models. And it's very different from business model to business model. Because if you are, for example, and I take a food retailer because I know this industry. If you take a food retailer concept and you look into what ESRS is asking you to do, they will talk about water dependency, pollinators decline, supplier ecosystem degradation. We would think about sourcing vulnerability. Do you continue to have access to these resources, which are nature? Cost of volatility, coffee, typical case. Because of certain nature-related risks and opportunities, the cost of the coffee is exponentially growing. What is the aspect to your cost of goods sold, which is your highest cost in the company? Supply resilience, capital allocation decisions. And if you think about how this is now discussed within companies, it's not yet there. It will take some time till the sustainability teams and the financial team make this bridge. And pretty hopeful that actually will contribute to giving them a little bit more language to do that properly, because it's just something in process. I'm sorry, it's a cliche to say that it's in development, but it's like that. Not sure that I'm answering your question in the depth which you probably want.
No, thanks. I think that's quite an honest and transparent answer, because I mean the food retailer example is of course a very convincing one, ne? And of course depending on the sector, it needs more additional maybe time and also experience in order to come up with a solid assessment that really points to the fact that something is more material. I think all of us are compliant, of course. Huh? I mean, they are coming from Germany. There are, of course, a number of laws that we have to comply with. But of course, when we talk about applying it to a type of sustainability declaration or statement, you want to really make a difference here. And yeah. We sometimes wonder and struggle in what case you can really make a true case. Huh? And yeah. So therefore, I very much understand where you're coming from. And also we are analyzing and discussing on a constant basis to what degree it can really be of additional importance to us yeah. to really produce more and release more information on that. Fair to say, important topic, but we are not really sure yeah. to what degree our asset managers, owners or lenders can really benefit from the information that we are going to yeah. provide. Thanks.
Well, to that yeah. point, I believe, and I was in a conversation with a large bank recently, you should not invent. That's for sure. You should not reach, look for dependencies where they don't exist. But I was with a large bank, and they were like, and I was like, they were struggling to make the connection between nature and their business model. And I had a colleague, academic, who said, okay, what's your business? Money. How do you do this? Data. Where do you crunch your data? Data centers. What are the two aspects which you need for data centers to function? Electricity and water for cooling. Are these centers in a territory where you can guarantee that this cooling is efficient? Unless you define a model which doesn't need cooling, which for now doesn't exist. And do you have a constant access to electricity? And I think it was a relatively simplistic connection, but it made sense. The fact is that we, as business leaders, we don't see this connection so immediate, because you need to see the whole value chain of your business model in order to be able to identify these dependencies. And probably investors are a little bit ahead with their expectations, because they want to know everything about your business. Where can you have issues and where you can create value? And they will also follow this development in a way which is valid, because they don't want you to talk about stuff which is immaterial. Believe me, they don't.
Okay. Thomas, we are going to prepare also some. Yeah. Just raise your hand.
I've got a question mm-hmm. as well. Thank you so much, Veronica, for the update. And I must say, I'm looking forward to seeing what's in the exposure draft. I've got a question on a rather formal aspect. I may have missed it, then please apologize. You mentioned that there will be a question in the exposure draft on the shape of standard settings. So I imagine that the question might read, do you think a practice statement is appropriate, or do you think a standard should be preferred? I definitely think there will be some feedback on this during the consultation. But from what you said, I understand that the ISSB has obviously not yet definitely decided for this project to end with a practice statement or a standard.
We did decide on that. But we are putting this question for a consultation, which is unusual for a standard. Because if you write a standard, you write a standard. You're not asking people, do you think it's a good idea to write a standard? Because this is part of your research project. So, but this one is a specific form. And because it's new, we thought that it's, and it also came from the market as a feedback. We said, okay, we're going to put this question. I have not seen yet how the question is formulated, to be very honest with you. So I haven't seen it yet. Maybe we didn't formulate it yet, but it will come.
Okay, fine. We will definitely have a look at it. And I'm speaking a bit under the control of the technical committee, but I believe that we will discuss the content and we'll probably prepare a comment letter to the ISSB to you within the consultation. And yeah. 120 days looks quite comfortable compared to to other projects.
Yeah, that would be good for me to understand if you feel comfortable with that, or you can say 150 would be better, or no, we don't want so long, but 120 is the standard we use normally. So we know that you guys have day jobs. It's not the only thing you do.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I think in the end, we appreciate, but also, so coming back to Thomas's question again, we appreciate also your argument and this, but what you said early on about this and why you put it in there. And then, we know where it comes from already. So that's was very, very helpful. I think this takes us perhaps to the, if there's no any further questions, to the end of today's conversation. I want to give you, thank you again very, very much for your time and your very insightful presentation on the state of the project. We are, as Thomas has said in the end, we're going to prepare a submission, a response in the end to contribute then to the development and in this way, looking very much forward to that. And we'll do this in the context of this technical committee.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you.
So thank you again very much, Linian, for your time, and we hope to see you also at another occasion again. If you can ask you Frankfurt or come from time to time also to Frankfurt, but also in any other context. And today this was very helpful in order to have this, would say, quick roundup on the state of the nature's related practice statement. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And feel free to shout any questions anytime. So we don't need to wait for any kind of
Thomas may do so. he's going to hold the pen on that one.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, Veronica.